Every box was checked. If Ohio State considered Penn State a matchup game, then we will evaluate it accordingly. Welcome back to The Beat, another week on the Austin and Berm Show, and we kick it off as we always do with former Ohio State captain Zach Bourne, who I imagine has a lot of thoughts about Ohio State absolutely eviscerating Penn State 38-14. Yes, I know the Nittany Lions have struggled. That was still a pretty good football team that had really, in my opinion, Zach, no chance, even when the game got a little tight at halftime and Ryan Day was stressing about one fumble. I had no concerns whatsoever for Ohio State that they were not going to pull away and win this game comfortably.
I thought it was a phenomenal performance. Outside of maybe the turnover before the half, it was a pretty complete game for this Ohio State football team. And I know Ryan, going into the game, wanted to make sure that the guys were ready to play. These Penn State Nittany Lions, man, they're really good players. They're a really good team. Let's be honest, they are really well coached, even though James Franklin isn't there, right? This is a program that, in all intents and purposes, was supposed to be playing in a national championship game here at the end of January. And so I thought the performance was great. Ryan, you could tell, was ecstatic after the game because he knew this was the first game in a while where athlete for athlete, player for player, it was a tough test for Ohio State from a matchup standpoint, and you already said that. Yeah. And so the way that they went out and played and were able to make explosive plays, defense was able to hold. Yes, you know, Penn State's offense isn't what it's supposed to be. But they have still two really, really good running backs back there that they're handing the ball off to. And so, yeah, I love the performance. I think Ryan loves the performance. This is something to build on.
Yeah, and you could tell, to your point, Zach, that Ryan Day was very pleased about it because he kept catching himself. He would talk about C.J. Donaldson's fumble before halftime and how they felt like they were going into the locker room down 21 instead of up 3. And then he'd go, yeah, but if you'd told me 2 months ago that I was going to beat Penn State by 24, I would have taken that in a heartbeat. Like, yes, Drew Auer was not playing quarterback for Penn State. James Franklin was not on the other sideline. Everything else was the same. The Penn State defense, they were missing one piece as well. Injuries, of course, are part of this, but it's not like their defensive front was decimated. It's not like they didn't have Jim Knowles trying to dial up a $3.1 million defense to slow down Ohio State. They had good players out there, and they had no answers. And I shouldn't discount the hour part because the quarterback talent disparity was not – I mean, that was not an equated situation. Julian Sayin is now a betting front runner to win the Heisman Trophy, and Ethan Grunkmeyer was making his second start. So that part, I think has to be factored into it. But the stuff about the trenches and the way Ohio State protected and ran block and the way that the defense performed in the second half with that shutout, I mean, everything about that, I think, has to go down as a huge plus for Ohio State.
Here's the thing. Ethan Grunkmeyer was an elite 11 quarterback, right? I believe this is his third year in the program at Penn State. This isn't like it's a true freshman that, you know, his eyes are super big. Yes, it's his second career start. But at the end of the day, maybe you lack a little bit of a leadership from that standpoint when you take out Drew Aller. But at the end of the day, man, this is a really talented quarterback. It's a guy that, you know, one of the top quarterbacks in the country in his recruiting class, been developed for the last 3 years, goes out there at a place like Penn State and is expected to compete. And so you can't take that away from this Ohio State defense either, even though it's a young quarterback from an experience standpoint.
So when you left the Horseshoe on Saturday afternoon, Zach, what was the one thing you were thinking about the most?
Well, one, I was thankful Caleb Downs' targeting call was overturned. I think that was number one. Number two is the explosiveness of this offense. When you actually – what gets me excited is some of these big games that we're going to see as the year goes on, right, in Ann Arbor. Big Ten championship game, hopefully, right, if all things go as planned. The college football playoff. When you've got big-time teams that are going to challenge us one-on-one and you're going to take those chances because that's what you have to do, it's scary what this offense can be, right? And I think you finally saw that for the first time in a while because leading up to this game, everyone was, you know, playing cover two, playing cover three. Everyone's, you know, doubling Carnell, doubling Jeremiah, right? Like they want you to run the football and they're playing a too high defense. Finally, you get a defense that's like, hey, we got the athletes. We got the horses to match up with you. Let's see what we can do. And you saw the way Julian Sayin was able to carve up Penn State's defense. That deep ball, it's majestic. Like, that's the only word I have for it. It's majestic. The way Carnell and Jeremiah get underneath those deep balls, and they contort their bodies in a way that they just it's perfectly. They shield themselves from the defender. It's perfect technique. But then again, what do you expect coming from Ohio State wide receivers? I mean, it's just it's a factory right there, and they're always doing the right things. But it gets me even more excited now after a performance on Saturday that now you go up to Ann Arbor. Now you potentially play Indiana in the Big Ten championship game. What Julian Sain and this offense can really do when you get into games like that.
That the deep ball to Jeremiah where he's running past double coverage and both of those guys are just like, you know, I thought the coverage was fine and there were two of them there and Jeremiah runs past him. The ball was perfectly placed by Julian Sain. It struck me as one of those plays where we talked about in the first couple of months when Ryan Day was reluctant to take some of those shots and we knew he was playing more methodically and was going to limit it. So can't you just throw it to Jeremiah anyway? Like, he's down there, he's going to catch it. And Julian's pretty darn good. I think that's the point that maybe we're getting to. Like, the stakes are going up. They treated Penn State as a matchup game. You have Michigan at the end of the month. As you mentioned, you're trying to get to the Big Ten championship game and beyond. When Ohio State, I guess, is fully trying, and I put that in quotes because every week is important to them and they treat them seriously, but when they are digging into the full playbook, that's what you're going to see. They're not going to be hesitant or reluctant to take shots to Carnell or Jeremiah because even when they are double covered, they can still make plays.
Well, you know, things have changed because early on in the year, Ryan always made the comment of just win the football game, right? Julian just needs to win the football game. And now last night, like his opening remarks, you could almost tell he's like gushing over Julian and the way that he's just throwing the football and the way it comes out of his hand and his decision-making and the deep balls and how anytime he drops back, it can be so explosive. Like you almost see Ryan as like giddy now, as in, well, you see what he's doing, guys, but I'm just waiting for this. You see what he's doing now, guys, but just wait because there's a lot more in the chamber, right? Like, that's almost the way I take it because at the end of the day, Julian's still only threw eight games, right? He's only threw eight games as a starter, and you're starting to see them open up this offense, and Ryan knows the better competition we go against and the more they challenge our wide receivers, watch out.
Yeah, he had more touchdown passes than incompletions against a Jim Knowles defense on Saturday, which that's about the craziest stat that I can come up with. And there are tons of them because he's completing, 85% of his passes.
Let me ask a question. Like, you know, yes, we can talk about, like, big-time marquee matchup, right? We can have that argument, and I get it. But why no one was talking about Julian Sain as a serious contender in the Heisman Trophy conversation, I don't understand it. Now, obviously, after Saturday, there's a little bit more conversation around it. But I would argue it's almost like people aren't at this point saying, hey, Julian Sain should be in the Heisman Trophy conversation. I think it's more so like, oh, well, the guys that we kind of thought were going to win the Heisman Trophy that we've been pushing – kind of fallen off a little bit, right? That's almost the reason why I think Julian Sain's now being put into this conversation, which is asinine. I mean, Julian Sain should be the leader in this conversation, and it should only be his case should only be getting stronger and stronger as every week goes on.
Yeah, I think Saturday, Zach, will be the tipping point for that. There were a handful of national media members that did not cancel on their trip to come cover this game that they had, you know, booked several months ago, expecting it to be the battle at the top of the Big Ten. And I think what happened with some of these voters is they watched the Texas game, and while Arch Manning's candidacy was flopping immediately, Julian did not look like, which he shouldn't have, and he was not a Heisman Trophy candidate in game number one because it was his first career start in his second year on campus against a Texas defense that he was just asked to go win the game. To your point, Ryan Day has changed that conversation. Ohio State has changed this conversation by putting some of its full publicity might behind the candidacy of both Julian Sain and Jeremiah Smith. But the point I was trying to make was these national media members that were there, and that was maybe the first time that they put their eyes on Julian Sain again since week one. They're like, oh, I didn't know that he could scramble like he did for 9 yards. I didn't know that the deep ball looked as perfect as it is. I didn't know that he had the poise and the accuracy, because against Texas, the last time that they were truly paying attention to Ohio State, it didn't look like that. And now they've seen this product, which is still not finished. As you mentioned, they're halfway through the season that they want to play. There's still a lot more improvement that Julian Sain can get to. I don't even know what that would look like, but I think you'll look in the days ahead, and the betting odds already reflect this, the straw polls and things that have had literally everybody around the country except Julian Sain and Jeremiah Smith for the last few weeks. I think all those will change. I think what he did against Penn State and the knowledge of the talent of that defense and Jim Knowles being there, and the fact that a handful of important influential voters got a fresh set of eyes on Julian Sain, I think it'll change that. And I think Julian Sain is going to win the Heisman.
I guess my question is, like, if those people are pushing the Heisman Trophy, then they're not doing their job if this is the first time they're seeing it, right? Like,
true.
If it's not Julian Sain, who else could it be? And that's what just irks me about the Heisman Trophy, because it's all about who's in the spotlight at that time. Like, Diego Pavia was like on this big push, and I'm like, what has he done besides playing in some marquee games recently? He's flopped the last 3 weeks, right? His numbers are nowhere near comparable. So it's like, what are we doing here? You know, it's the same thing kind of with Ty Simpson. I think a really good quarterback, right? But there's been some games this year where he's just completely flopped. And it's not flopped. You rely on the run game. You rely on the defense, right? Like, let's be honest. You think Alabama right now, you don't think their offense are going to blow your brakes off, right? Especially in some of the games that they've had over the last 6 weeks. So I guess I just don't understand that mindset of like, hey, until we see him in person, we're not really going to push him. You know, Mendoza's a great quarterback, right? But I think, you know, everyone's carrying that Oregon game into this. And I agree. He's probably the biggest competition to Julian Sain. And I think maybe from a media standpoint, especially national media standpoint, they are losing it because it's two Big Ten players.
Yeah, well, and I didn't bring that up to say that it was a right or wrong approach from those voters. And I disagree with the way the Heisman continues to be given out, and really all college football awards, because I was asked last week to vote for one of the defensive awards and narrow down the semifinalists. It's literally the midpoint of the regular season. Why do we have to do this right now? And why does the Heisman have to be given out immediately after the conference championships and before the most important games of the year? You and I have talked about this before. If you go back to 2014, who would have won the Heisman? Ezekiel Elliott, like, because of what he did in the postseason. And maybe
it wouldn't even have been close.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been. And maybe that's not fair, because his entire season, the first half of it, he wasn't doing the things that he did at the end of it. There still would be some recency bias involved in that, and I get it that there may not be any perfect system, but I think I'd rather see guys performing consistently in the playoff high stakes matchups, which is what Zeke did in a Big Ten championship game and two playoff games, and give an award that rather than, oh, you ran for 250 yards against Grambling, or, you know, whatever, like, pad the stats. But we're never going to get a perfect system for that, but there's certainly improvements that could be made. But and the way it's going to be now, the narrative going into the Big Ten championship game, if things hold throughout this month of November, and by the way, there's four more weeks of the regular season to go, like, the Heisman could be determined by one game, which is Indiana against Ohio State.
Which would be – this is going to be crazy to say, okay? And I know that we're probably going to get some comments on this after I say this.
Oh, yeah, let's go.
This Big Ten championship game could be the game of the century in the Big Ten.
Woo.
I'm just saying that. I know, and the reason why I say that, game of the century, because this would probably be the biggest game since 1 versus 2, Ohio State, Michigan. When was that, 2016? Was that the last time it was 1 versus 2? Right? Yeah. Outside of that, am I missing another? I don't think I'm missing another Ohio State, Michigan game. I think that was the last one, right?
And you had the high stakes game in 23, but okay. I don't. Were they 1 and 2? I don't remember if they were. They must have been.
I'm not sure. My mind's just going back to 2016. You're right. 2023 was a huge game. You are 100%. Or is it 23 or 22?
Well, both.
Both were huge games, right?
Yeah.
But I'm just, I don't know why I think of Ohio State, Michigan, and maybe it's everything that's transpired the last couple of months that's come out of why I just turned off the last 4 years of the Ohio State, Michigan game.
Right? No, I think that's fair. The last one that doesn't have an asterisk.
And the scandals around it, and, you know, I just.
The last non-asterisk version, 1-2.
Correct. My mind goes back to 2016. And the whole reason why I say game of the century, because the way Indiana is playing right now and the way that their head coach acts, carries himself, is sending a message. Like, Indiana's going out, and Kirk Cignetti and this team is purposely running it up on people. And he's come out and said it. He's like, hey, listen, after last year, I can't just win games, right? We're Indiana. If we win games by two touchdowns, people are going to be like, oh, they're not that great. We literally have to blow teams out. And the way that he's got his team playing and the way that he's going to be leading into that game, you know, he's going to be squeezing as much juice into those headlines, into that game as much as possible. I just think it's going to be an absolute showdown. I think the theatrics around the entire week are going to be next level. It's almost like Kirk Cignetti to me is like Jim Harbaugh on steroids.
Mm.
That's how he comes off to me. And not that I don't like the guy. Actually, I think he's quite hilarious, and I would probably enjoy playing for the guy, right? Because I just see the way that he holds himself and carry, you know. But I think everything leading up to that is going to be undefeated versus undefeated, in my opinion, hopefully, if everything goes right in Ann Arbor. But also, Indiana's going to be so hungry because of what happened last year in the horseshoe, right? Like, this team is just wanting to latch on to a marquee win, and they're waiting for that. And so that's why, you know, I know we're putting the cart way before the horse, but you just start talking about a game where guys want to match up with Ohio State. Guys want to say, hey, listen, I'm going one-on-one. I'm better than you. You know, my horse versus your horse. That's what's going to happen when you get Indiana. But I also think that's what you're going to get from Michigan and Ann Arbor, right?
Although I
can't stand the game plan. It's a very good game plan, but I can't stand the game plan that they have against Ohio State. Whereas in, you know, it's just, hey, we're going to run the football, control the clock. It's kind of going to be a slugger of a game. Whereas in, I think Indiana's complete opposite. Indiana's like, hey, listen, we're going to put on a show. Let's go. Right.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to outscore you. We're going to play you. We're going to hit you. We're going to light this thing up.
No, I completely agree. And that's the Cignetti impact, that we're talking about Indiana as a real one and a potentially historic Big Ten championship game. So as you, it's unfair because we're saying that Penn State is a talent equated matchup. So we take that at face value, and winning as comfortably as Ohio State did matters. But was there anything that you saw then as you were watching Saturday? It's like, I don't know if I like this, and projecting it to either Michigan or an Indiana matchup. Anything that had you even slightly concerned on Saturday?
There's two things. I'm going to be picky on one of them. The other one, it's kind of a recurring problem. Red zone, especially inside the 10-yard line, running the football.
Yeah.
A little worrisome, right? A couple times on Saturday where I'm like, we're not going to get this in. Like, what's going on here, right? Like, we're running 13, 14 personnel, and we're not getting the push. We're not getting the separation. Like, so many times, especially in goal line, you need to create levels, right? Because if everyone's at a straight line, you're just running into a brick wall. So you need to create levels on the offensive line. And a lot of times you can utilize that with a fullback, right? Of being able to insert him, especially reading on lead zones, on whatever it might be. And it's a little worrisome. I mean, Penn State, obviously, as you said, very good team, very good front seven. Those guys are still around. You know, it's not like they're hurting there. But as the year goes on, you play Michigan in Ann Arbor. They are a tough-ass football team, and they're going to test you there. Indiana's the same way. Then you get into the playoff. Like, you got to figure something out. You can't just line up in 13 and 14 and blow straight ahead, because it's just not working. Or maybe it's just not the way this team is set up, right?
And right.
I love Nate Roberts. I love what he's done. You know, he's not the biggest guy. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. I haven't done a deep dive into it, but that worries me some. Like when you get in those situations, it should be mindset, attitude, like two plays and worrying. If we don't get it the first time, we're definitely get it the second time. Like I know there was one time on Saturday, I think it was within the 4 yard line or whatever, and it's third down. You know, it was like, guys, we shouldn't even be getting the third down. And so that's a big thing. And then the one other thing that, and like I'm being nitpicky, and it worried me because you saw a little bit from Wisconsin, not Wisconsin, you saw this a little bit from Illinois, is when they get in a gun and they show a read option, they're just getting too many yards for my liking running the football, right? You saw in the first half, what did Penn State do? They went to Illinois' game plan of the read option that Luke Altmyer and them were doing in the second half, where you're obviously putting stress on defensive ends, right? Once he gives it, right, you got linebackers that are getting blocked. It's just – it kind of slows you down from that standpoint because in read option, you literally – you're sitting there and reading and reacting, right? And so now you're on your heels a little bit. You saw Penn State go to that, and that worried me some. Plus – they had way too much success on their little schoolhouse left and schoolhouse right sweeps, right? And I'm watching this, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is like a Michigan play, right? They're taking it out of Michigan's playbook. And so seeing some success there worried me some. Now, is it something that's a glaring hole that I think is an issue? No, but I do think Illinois and Penn State exploited something. Now, in the second half, you saw Ohio State take that away, right? And the other thing is, once you jump out on a team like that, they can't run a read option, right? Maybe they can, but they need to open up the offense because when you're trailing, you're not going to, you know, that's just marching the ball down the field from that standpoint. So get under control, though, because Michigan, especially with Bryce Underwood, it's what they're going to do, right? It's going to be read option, RPO, all of that. And so you might see it a little bit this week with Purdue, right? You're definitely going to see it with UCLA, so you're gonna have some practice with it. You just gotta get to the bottom of it.
Yep, gotta execute it. Yeah, I think that the next 2 weeks actually get a little bit more value because of that in terms of preparation for what you're gonna face, but with Michigan for sure and potentially Indiana after that. Frankly, pretty surprised at the way Purdue was able to hang around with Michigan, but that's a conversation for another show. We are trying to wrap up with a three and out as Zach Bourne breaks it down with his stars from the 38-14 win over the Penn State Nittany Lions.
You want to know something? I think all of us sitting here could just be like Carnell, Jeremiah, Dylan, right? I think
all right.
That's pretty damn good, right? But what I'm going to do right here, Jeremiah and Carnell, they get to share a star, right? Because they could share a Buckeye leaf because the way those two play in, don't take this the wrong way. Sometimes I hate being an Ohio State fan because you get so accustomed to what guys do. And it's just like another day that these wide receivers are playing at this level. Right. And it's like, it's almost not even fair, right? Because that's a new expectation. And sometimes I kick myself thinking like, that's not the expectation. These guys are elite. They are generational type players. Like what these guys are doing are next level. If these guys were doing what they were doing when I was playing, I wouldn't have been on the field, right? Like I would have been playing, man. Like these guys are athletically gifted. It's insane. So spoiled. Thank you. They make us very spoiled as fans. But we need to really enjoy what those guys are doing and realize that they're aliens, right? People keep on saying that they're aliens. Second Buckeye leaf is Julian Sane. Stud. He's been I've been waiting for just to go on a rant about his Heisman, and we kind of already did that from that standpoint. It's been brewing for more than a couple of weeks. So this guy is he should be the next Heisman Trophy winner for Ohio State, and very good chance he could be a two-time Heisman Trophy winner because what they have potentially, well, what they do have coming back and what they have in that roster, Woo! Especially next year. Watch out. Number three, we haven't talked about this guy. He's been talked about a lot, but we haven't talked about him specifically on the show for a little while. Arvel Reese.
Woo!
Just monster. Again, it goes back to what I just said. If Arvel Reese was on the roster when I was there, I would have been seeing a lot of the bench, right?
You played next to somebody at the end of that year in 2012 who was close, but
yeah, you want to know something? Arvel Reese to me is the closest thing we have to Ryan Shazier. So swear, and I think Ryan Shazier is a top five linebacker in Ohio State football history. I don't think we've had, no offense to the other guys, I don't think we've had anyone like him since him until Arvel Reese showed up. And what Arvel is able to do by coming off the edge, by playing in coverage, by blitzing, his speed, his physicality, like the combination that you want in an All-American linebacker is what Arvel Reese is. And he just I don't even want to say continues to get better, but it's almost like he continues to answer the call when a big play is needed. You look around, there's eight. There it is, right? There were a couple times on Saturday where you're like, we need a big play. Defense, come on. Eight, there he is, right? Yep. Makes a play, we're off the field. It's just, again, we are getting spoiled with what Arvel and Sonny are doing together, but more specifically, how big of a freak Arvel is. And we take it as, oh, that's just who he is, man. We need to cherish that. We need to understand how special that is. What we're watching is next level, and it doesn't come around often. So Arvel, man, stud. Arvel is going to have to lead the charge. You know, the next couple weeks, we'll see. You brought up Purdue, UCLA, who knows? But especially in Ann Arbor against Bryce Underwood, especially hopefully in Indy against Indiana. Arvel Reese, you're leading the charge for us, buddy.
He is, and he is, as you mentioned, elevating his game when it has to be done. You're into November. You're making that final push last 4 weeks of the regular season, and then everything beyond that, those aliens are going to be the difference maker if Ohio State's going to defend that national championship. We'll see, because there's still a lot of football left, and we'll break it down every Monday with a Bourne Blitz. You can see on the graphics. If you watch every Monday, you know that I'm not Zach, that he's Zach. But I didn't change around the format on here, so Berm's going to yell at me for that.
It's okay. It's Halloween weekend. We're just dressing up as each other.
That's right. There you go. You got to the bottom of it. We're just doing the best we can. I'm still rusty from vacation and Disney. Appreciate Berm for filling in for me last week. So I don't, maybe the graphics were right for that. I don't know. I know I took a lot of strays for my camera and mic setup, and now I messed up the graphics, but all I care about is talking about Ohio State football with Zach Bourne on a Monday. The rest is just a bonus. Thanks for joining us as always on 97.1 The Fan, 10TV, 10TV Plus. Zach, good luck with the rest of that move, and we will talk to you again next week after Ohio State and Purdue. We'll see you.